is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builders Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Another legislative check-in. State Representative Cedric Hayden joining us. Thanks for being on this afternoon.
Well, thanks for reaching out, Kyle. Always a pleasure to be on with you.
So, update us, first of all, several days ago, we had an issue with the COVID-19 exposure among the House floor. What can you tell us about where that stands right now?
So, that dates back to some exposures or some positive COVID tests that didn't become known back to mid last month, or April 1st today, so mid-March. There was a positive COVID test that took a little while to get that information to Speaker Kotek. And then last week was canceled, as folks may or may not have seen. So they canceled the floor and then said they would reevaluate on Monday the 29th. They did. Within that time frame, there was a second positive test of somebody associated with the Capitol. Now, under current HIPAA rules, we don't know who that was. I don't know who that was. The members don't know who that was. I suppose there's a few people in the Capitol that do, but that's not public information. And this week, as of Monday, we are back in the Capitol, and we are having floor sessions, and we continue to do committee work in our committees.
As we continue through the current metrics and things that are happening, do you see a shift to more of the in-person meetings at the Capitol?
So a couple of things are happening that would give the opportunity for that. One, starting next week, legislators through the lawmakers, through the CDC's a change in their protocol have been added to the essential workers list, and so they become qualified next week under the priority list. Now, we know May 1st, the federal government has said basically your proprietary or your priority list that you have within your states, although you can continue to concentrate on trying to get to some of those hard-to-get populations, it has to be available to everybody. And so next week there is actually a drive for legislators once they become qualified to get the vaccine to go get that. And so if that does happen, there will be a couple of weeks after that, they get the second shot, and then, they'll be vaccinated. And so there'll be less of an argument not to have the Capitol open, because then the lawmakers and their staff will have had the opportunity to be protected from the vaccination.
What's the concern level there when you have folks gathering that are coming in from all parts of the state who cumulatively are often exposed to a number of people?
So I actually look forward to having the Capitol open, but I do understand that we have to follow the safety protocols. And so I think the opportunity for folks to be vaccinated through the regular priority schedule will be a turning point. Now, as a healthcare provider that works in a hospital, I've had my vaccinations for quite some time because I've continued that practice through the legislative session. And so there are folks here that are concerned with it. There's folks here that aren't as concerned with it. Everybody still has the option whether they want to get that vaccination or not. But I look forward to having the public come back because it's a really different feel, really different vibe, just doing everything electronically.
Give us an update, especially coming from the overall GOP perspective. I've seen a couple of releases come out regarding State Senator Floyd Prezansky's proposal to change mandatory minimum sentencing guidelines. Is that kind of the most controversial topic right now in Salem?
There's a couple of controversial, as you know, we have controversial topics that are controversial to different groups, but this is a pretty big concept that's coming forward. We're talking about Measure 11. If you look back at a little history, these measures were put back in the 90s to curb the rise in crime. And we did see that the crime has declined. What's interesting now is we're actually, particularly in the metropolitan Portland area, where we now have a DA that is going very lightly on the prosecution duties that they do, basically not prosecuting a lot of the crimes that have been in the past, we're seeing a rise in crime. For example, there, last year we had a 26 record high in murders in the metropolitan area. We're already halfway there this year. So there's a lot of concern. I mean, a couple examples of legislation that was passed in prior sessions, the Max train killer, Jeremy Christensen, made him retroactively not eligible for the death sentence. And so what that does is it takes off some negotiating for our prosecutors to be able to, help the victims to determine, what happened as a negotiating point. When they don't have that, it can really limit the victims to get to some sort of answers, what happened with their family members and whatnot. And so Floyd Prozanski, Senator Prozanski, is taking this path again to again reduce those measures. And I think it's something that we will, to our ability, push back on, because we just don't think that's safe for Oregonians.
Do you think that's an interesting proposal coming from someone who is a prosecutor?
Well, I can't get in the mind of other, colleagues here of why they would be bringing that. But, it's an interesting path, because you would think that they would understand the perspective strongly from the victims and be victims advocates. A lot of these statutes will be impacting, crimes, particularly rape crimes. We've worked hard. Some of my chief sponsored bills have been to get funding to get these rape kits, get them completed to where there's been a backlog of actually going through and getting the DNA out of those so they can get into a system to help catch some of these violent criminals. And this will kind of roll that work back. And, we know that a lot of our vulnerable citizens, these are cases with sexual assault that tend to be women, children, and people with disabilities. So I'm disappointed to see this rollback coming forward. And we'll do what we can to maintain as safe as community as we can.
So are there particular GOP counter proposals to this?
Well, as far as our counter proposals, it's like, let's not go down this path to reduce that. We did have success in the 90s with some of these measures. We've taken a lot of that off the table in prior sessions. And so our counter proposal is that, we've gone far enough with this and we don't need to go further with it rather than increasing, more things on it.
As we're going through this session, one of the big things, of course, is the crafting of the next state budget. Where are we at on that?
So the co-chairs are pushing forward a budget framework of about $26 billion. This is an increase again. There is a projected kicker. That's something in our Constitution that if we have more than 2% of the funds that were expected to come in, if we go over that, then the corporate side goes to our schools. That no longer goes back to the corporations, but the personal individual taxpayer gets a small refund on the taxes that they had paid in. That's called our kicker system, which is a little unique to Oregon. Now, they call it the color of money, but you can, through legislation, change monies that get routed through the general fund, which basically changes the equation of that. We've got legislation coming forward to take about $15 million of, if there is a kicker, to take that off the table. We don't know what it will be until we get the final numbers, but we are resistant to the idea of watering down or removing the kicker. We think that's one of the last stops that we have in Oregon to control, you know, additional spending.
What kind of guidance are state department managers being given in terms of what their budget proposals should look like?
Well, originally, if you go back a few months, they were looking at cuts anywhere from 6 to 11%. Now, that would be cuts of current service level. So folks understand that that's not a zero-based budget. That's saying whatever was spent last year plus your current service level, whatever you'll need to increase with, you know, salaries and wages and additional costs. And so they were originally looking at kind of a 6% cut across the board there that the co-chairs were going to have to pick. Well, with the COVID funds coming in from the federal government, we got an initial $1.4 billion that went through DAS. We're looking at that now. I'm on the Ways and Means sub on general government. DAS is our agency that distributes those funds. We're looking at another $2.6 billion coming in from the federal government with the American Recovery Act that was recently passed in Congress. So the end result of that is we have more money now than anybody ever expected to have. And so there's not a need to increase taxes in order to keep our current service level intact.
Got to take a break on Inside Douglas County. More when we come back. State Representative Cedric Hayden, the interview, a podcast after 1 at 541radio.com, 1246 at News Radio 1240, KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1248, Lars Larson coming at 1. State Senator Floyd Prezanski on tomorrow's program. Don't forget to later today, brand new on KQEN Local Talk at 4, it's Your Cue with Shannon Sebastian. Listen for that. State Representative Cedric Hayden on with us now. Talk about maybe some of your committee work and the status of some of your legislative proposals this session.
Yeah, I'm happy to do that. I want to start with, you know, kind of work as I'm one of the assistant leaders in our caucus, and the GOP or the Republicans have been saying during this session that we need to be budgets forward first. We need to bring wildfire recovery first. We need to bring COVID recovery. And our colleagues on the other side of the aisle have been resistant to that, basically saying, no, we want to get all our pet projects, if you will, get funded first and then do those. And so we've been using a tactic that is available to us, one of the only tactics, to read bills, which basically means that the bill has to be read in its entirety. We've been doing, we're still working through a certain bill that's 170 pages long now. And just today, we're starting to get the two sides, the two leadership sides, negotiating. And I think this evening, it's not set in stone, but I think this evening, we will kind of get some resolution on that and start moving some of the budget bills that we're worried about that we see as a priority. So we'll see. Some negotiations starting to happen there with that. As far as my committee work and legislative work, I spent a lot of time in the healthcare issues. Most of these issues have some element of bipartisanship, but healthcare, you know, touches a lot of different legislative things. So I do have a couple of bills that have been passed through the House or through the healthcare committee already that I chief sponsored that will be moving forward, hopefully, to get approval on the floor, like a dental director for the state to have funding for that. So there's a few items there that I'm working on, and then there's some bigger aspirational goals that I'm working on that probably my bill won't move, but concepts of it are already being requested by other lawmakers to adopt into their some of their legislation.
Are you hearing from residents of your district, which includes Douglas and Lane County, sections of those, are you hearing from people more this year or less?
Well, it seems to be, we hear a lot, like there is a bill that has produced thousands, around 5,000-6,000 emails to our office. It's House Bill 2510, which when you get these controversial bills on restriction of gun rights, we get a lot of communication on those types of legislation. Now, that's already passed through the the healthcare committee, came to a healthcare committee, interestingly enough. I was opposed to that legislation, but we're hearing a lot on that. So I would say the level of communication by phone and email is pretty consistent of what we've seen before. What I'm really missing and what we don't have is that one-on-one person or that groups of constituents being able to come up and say, hey, we're from House District 7, and we have this issue, and we want to talk to you about it, and have three or four people here in the office, and they really are able to explain in detail what the situation is. I'm really missing that aspect of it, because that's where we really learn a lot about on-the-ground issues that we may not pick up otherwise, and it's really hard to convey in an email.
I want to back up a minute. You mentioned the gun bill. I think that's probably, you're probably talking about the one I'm thinking of. Tell us more about that proposal and what it would do.
So they call it a safe storage bill, and it would do a couple of things. There's some liability with it if that we're opposed to, generally, the GOP is opposed to, that if a law-abiding citizen has a gun that is stolen, and that gun gets used in a crime, they can potentially be liable for that crime. And so the previous owner of the gun that had it stolen, there is some liability for them under this bill, that they would be responsible for the crime committed by somebody completely different. And so, you know, we're really concerned with that. The other aspect of the bill is, you know, a safety aspect of if all of your weapons are required to be locked up in a safe or a gun room or have a padlock on them, some sort of safety devices. Just had a case this month in Lane County where a gentleman broke into a couple's home, smashed the door down, was in the bedroom, and the husband there was able to, and it said in the newspaper, grab a gun, control the situation, used a warning shot, didn't kill the suspect or shoot the suspect, but just a really good example of responsible gun ownership that protected his family. And if that's locked in a safe, you know, the criminals are going to know that, and it just takes away their ability to protect their families. And I'm really concerned about that legislation.
Now, being a dentist, you have particular interest in a lot of medical things. You've mentioned a couple, but are there other medical healthcare related proposals being considered in this session?
So there's a couple of big items that are being considered, and that's healthcare for all is a concept that's coming forward, which would basically mean if you live in the state of Oregon, or really if you are physically in the state of Oregon, you would get healthcare coverage. So that's a healthcare for all one. We don't currently have a cost on that, but I think that will be something that would be extremely expensive to do. The other is something called that I've been involved with is public option. How do we get a healthcare plan that individuals and small businesses, and this is one of my bills, 3381, that I'm bringing forward, talked about it as kind of an aspirational until, you know, it does gain some traction. It is starting to gain some traction on both sides of the aisle, to where rather than having each individual or small business have to negotiate their healthcare to try and get a larger risk pool of these folks that they could buy into a healthcare system for their businesses, for themselves, for their families, for their employees, to broaden the risk pool and bring down the rates of it. So there is some discussion around that. Those types of large moves usually take multiple sessions to move forward, but that's one thing I've been spending a lot of time on.
With the supermajority being the Democrats, are you still dealing with Republicans not always feeling like they're getting much play in the process?
Well, yeah, a couple of, you know, it's almost like the feeling this is, so we're in my side's in a super minority, and we see bills coming forward, like the beer and wine tax bill, for an example, of 3,000% tax increase on that. We wouldn't normally see that type of legislation coming forward if they didn't feel like they had complete control of that, at least not that huge of an increase on it, just really, really large tax increases on our beer and wine industry, which, you know, we've got a unique industry in Oregon for that with all of our vineyards, and it would be crippling to them. Another thing that's coming forward that I just can't really understand is taxing the unemployment benefits and the stimulus checks, or if you're a small business, the payroll protection loan program or grant program that came out that was available for small businesses with the intent of saving the state money from unemployment benefits being paid out if these small businesses would just keep these people employed, even though their business dropped off, to where their revenue dropped off during the COVID. The businesses did the right thing. They kept them employed in many cases, and now Oregon's wanting to come back, or some of my colleagues are wanting to come back and tax all of that, whether it was a personal unemployment check, whether it was a stimulus check, or whether it was a small business with a PPP. And I think the imbalance emboldens them to do those kind of things.
All right, State Representative Cedric Hayden, thanks for being on this afternoon.
Thank you, sir.
1257 at News Radio 1240 KQAN.
Listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN, a daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications, your home for Douglas County's news team. News Radio 1240 KQEN.